Welcome back to part two of our interview with Auric Jackson.
So do you think it's more like that's our edge? That sharpens our edge up where we can go into something with kind of an attitude where, you know, my dad did this to me, so whatever you do, you can't break me.
You know, like anything, it can be, depending on how you approach it, it could be healthy,
right,
or it can be unhealthy.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Yes. And I think a lot of times, just when you look at human beings, we tend to lean towards the unhealthy side of it. Mm. I'm not going to forgive you because you don't deserve my forgiveness. Right. Or, you know, and, you know, here's the thing. Forgiveness is not for them.
Right.
It's for you. Yeah. Straight up. Like, and I know that is so freaking cliche, but it's just real talk. Like, you know, and here's the thing. You can forgive somebody and you can still be like, and you're not good for me. I need to move on, or this and the other. Look, I just ended, I guess I suck at dating. So I just ended a relationship where I was with somebody, caught them in a lie. They were cheating. Okay, cool. I'm going to give you a full slate, a clean slate. Not even a week later, I walk in and
boom
on them getting busy. And I'm like, okay. And it was like, you know what? I forgive you because I'm not going to hold on to that. I'm going to move on with my life. You're not going to win. Like, to me, when you don't forgive somebody, they've won.
Yeah.
Because you've given them all the power.
Yeah.
But, you know, in that moment, I was like, look, I forgive you and I'm good. And he was like, so we going to get back together? I was like, no, we're not. But you said you forgive me. I do forgive you, but I also know that what you're bringing to the table, I ain't trying to have none of that. You know, you're lying, you're cheating, and I know what I bring. So I forgive you. Have a good life. And of course, the thing is people will get pissed off. What you said, you're supposed to forgive me, and no. I can forgive you and still make a better choice for myself.
Right.
And I think people collapse like that. Like, if I forgive them, that means I got to give in, or I got to be this, or I got to do that, or say no. Look at what's best for you in that moment and forgive that person just so you can move forward in life, so you won't have any residue or this, that, and the other. You won't be triggered by bubblegum or whatever the course is. You know, so I mean, that's how it is. So, you know, that second part is, you know, forgive the person that had you create that box. Because believe it or not, another piece of that is when you don't forgive that person that had you create that box, even if that person isn't directly in your life,
right,
because that's so at the top of mind for you, other people are going to be in your life that remind you of that person and that do the same thing. And you're wondering why you're pissed off all the time. You know, you know, some people, like, I hate him, but then they turn around and date another dude who's like the same way, you know? And it's like, until you're clear about that, like, it's hard to move on. So, which leads to the third part of destroying your box. Like, don't be scared to forgive yourself. You have to forgive yourself. Mm. We have all made stupid mistakes. We've all said some stuff that we wish we could take back. We've done things that we wish we could take back. Mm-hmm. You know, and for me, like with my dad, it was a whole situation of after that In Living Color interview, sometime after that, I realized that I needed to forgive him. And I did. There was nothing attached to it. I was just like, Dad, you know, I want to talk to you. You know, I forgive you for this, that, and the other. It was one of the best conversations ever. And after even that amazing conversation, I still felt like we were kind of getting better, but we weren't. It was still something there. And then me just being the type of person that I just kind of took some an inner look, and I'm like, what's going on? And then I realized that I was feeling guilty for how I had treated my dad over those years when he tried to get back in my life.
Right.
So, like, he'd show up to events and stuff like that, and I was a jerk to him. Like, I was a stone-cold jerk. So I realized that final step was I had to forgive myself. And after I forgave him, then I forgave myself, that's when, like, the magic of our relationship, like, kicked up. And my dad and I, we have the most amazing relationship right now. Like, when I say amazing, I call him the comeback kid. And
nice.
I call him the comeback kid because every time he tries to come in my life, I shut him down. He come back, I shut him down. He come back, I shut him. He kept coming. He never gave up. And so now, like, he's my, not only my father, he's my confidant. He is my mentor. He is the father I long to be. I mean, he could have given up at any point in time and been like, psh, he's the husband I long to be. So it, we have, it's very amazing what we have. So, and that's what's available. Like, when you do that work, like, you acknowledge that there is a box, you forgive the person that had you created, and you forgive yourself, like, that just opens up so much, because you're not spending so much energy and time trying to hate on somebody else, you know? So, so that's one of the pieces in Don't Be Scared. The other is, don't be scared to do you. That's like, do you, and do you unapologetically. Stop apologizing for who you are just to make other people comfortable. You know, and something I'm telling people all the time, whether it's kids, adults, I don't care how young, I don't care if you're two, I don't care if you're 200. Stop trying to impress other people before you impress yourself.
Okay.
Like, we spend so much time, oh, I want you to like me. I want you to, I want to be a part of this group. And I say that from a space of being that person yep. for 20 plus years. Right. You know what I'm saying? I.e. the relationship I talked about earlier where I hated Rocky Road, but I was like, but I want you to like me. I want you to feel loved by me. This is the biggest crack of BS, you know? And then I realized, like, I was spending so much time trying to please all these other people. Mind you, it wasn't just my partner at the time. It was my partner, my mom, my grandmother, my grandparent. Like, I was trying to please everybody. And it drove me sick almost. I was so stressed out because what one person wanted from me did not necessarily line up with what the other person wanted from me. So if they ended up in the same room with me at the same time, I was having a meltdown because I'm like, I don't know who I need to be. Like, do I need to be this person for person A, or do I need to be this person for person B? Is person A going to think I'm weird because I'm acting like this for person B? I was a chameleon. I was always changing myself just to make people like me, you know? And it got to a point, like, I did some work and I realized that one of my eternal questions that I used to have is, hi, my name is Arik. Do you like me? And what can I do to make you like me? Like, that was, like, anybody that I met, whether it was a friend, a dating potential, employer, client, like, that's how I always showed up. And, dude, that is exhausting.
So you basically went in a subservient mode.
Absolutely. Not basically. All the way. Like, I was that the whole time, and I didn't realize I was spending so much time trying to be something for somebody else. I didn't know who to be for myself. So when I was by myself in those times, and, you know, I've been doing this for 15 years, and I'm on the road a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm by myself a lot.
Right.
And at one point in my career, I was so used to, like, trying to please everybody else that when I got by myself, it was almost depressing because I'm like, I couldn't even enjoy myself.
Right.
It was like, okay, do I like this? Do I not? You know? And that's when I realized, I'm like, you know, I'm going to start impressing myself. Right. I'm going to start giving myself a high five. You know, I'm going to start smacking my own self on the ass. Like, you know, that's what I'm going to do for me, you know? And taking that on, what ended up happening, and this was a funny thing, I started impressing myself, being proud of who I am, and then all of a sudden other people started liking me, like, for no reason. And I was like, wait, I got this messed up. I had this backwards the whole time, you know? So, and I tell kids, like, you know, stop dumbing down yourself to make other people comfortable.
Yeah.
We all know that teenagers, and look, I get it. In middle school, in high school, you're trying to belong. It's all about, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You need to be self-actualized and belong. But at the end of the day, you know, a lot of kids and adults, I'm not even going to excuse the adults from this, they will choose to do unhealthy things that they know is not healthy for them just to please somebody. And I'm like, look, cut it out. Like, you know, and I grew up on a block, south side of Chicago, like, back in the day, like the block you grew up on, it was kind of like your own, like, get along gang. Like, it was six of us that grew up. And me growing up, I was always dumbing down myself. Like, I would get good grades because you got to understand, my mom is 5'4". She's a big girl. She's proud of it. She calls herself thickness. Like, she's happy of who she is. And she was the only girl out of all of her siblings, had 12 cousins around the same age. All of them tried to fight my mom. None of them won. Okay. So my mom is an OG for real. Yeah. Like, you know, and so when it came to, like, grades and stuff, my mom didn't play. I got my first uppercut from my mama.
Damn.
Like, I'm not even sure. It was because one day I decided I thought I was grown. Like, you know, she told me to do the dishes. I went outside. I hung with my boy. She came back in. Why you didn't do the dishes? And I don't know what. I want to blame it on drugs so bad, but no drugs were present. I don't know what came over me. I guess, like, I felt because I was like, I think it was like 15, 16. She was like, why didn't you do? I thought I told you to do these dishes. My response, I know you're not talking to me like that. And within a matter of a minute, I was looking up at the ceiling. Dang. Because my mom threw that uppercut and I ended up on the floor. And I remember thinking, am I looking at the ceiling right now? You know, but I say all that to say, like, you know, my mom didn't play.
Right.
Like, you know, she's like, education is everything. So me bringing home bad grades was not an option.
Right.
But what would happen is when I got around my boys, especially, you know, like as we're like in seventh grade or whatever, like getting older, like they'd be like, man, I got an F on that test. Dude, what you get? I'd be like, man, that test was just hard. I don't even want to talk about what I got. Mind you, I got an A on the test. Because I didn't want them to be like, not my boys, because I was smart. And even when I was in high school, like the dudes I used to hang with, it's so funny. I had made the dean's list.
Okay.
You can only make the dean's list if you got like all A's and maybe a B. Yeah. So one day my boy was like, how did you end up on the dean's list? I was like, man, it's a miscalculation. I don't know what happened. Like, I was dumbing myself down just to make them comfortable. And then one day I came home to my mom. My mom's in the kitchen. She's crying. And I'm like, who do I need to fight right now? Like, who did it?
Right.
And she goes on to let me know. As a matter of fact, she doesn't even look up. She's still doing the dishes. And she says, sometimes I question if I was a good enough mother and if I raised you right.
Hmm.
You talk about something cutting deep. When she said that, bro, like in that moment, it was like instantly I went on, I'm going to make mama proud mode. Like, you know, all my boys, like before that, I had a conversation with my boys. I was like, hey, I'm thinking about going to college. My boy Eric was like, man, you ain't going to college. And I believed him. And I stopped taking actions. After that moment with my mom, turned around. I did my own paperwork. I filled out a FAFSA. I'm surprised I didn't go to jail for that FAFSA because I was just throwing numbers on there. I was like, okay, so 4,000, no, 40,000. Yeah. Like, I was just making stuff. I'm surprised I got grants, you know. But in that moment, I was like, you know what? I'm about to do this. You know, not only for my mom, but for me, like, who doesn't want to be successful? And so I got my admission letter, took that admission letter to my boys. I was like, hey, guess who's going to college? And my boy Eric lived right next door to him. He was like, man, you ain't going to college. Ain't none of us going to college. Side note, I will never forget when he said, ain't none of us going to college. I realized that people who are not trying to do something or make something of themselves, mm-hmm. they're going to try to pull you down right yeah. with them. And so he said that. And then me being as shady as I am sometimes, I had the admission letter folded up in my back pocket. And when he said, ain't none of us going to college, I pulled that admission letter out. I flipped it. I was like, yes, I am. And he's like, oh, you'll be back.
Oh,
I was like, you trying to send me to jail? Like, really? And I just remember thinking to myself, man, even my so-called boy isn't even happy for me, you know? And over time, like being a poet, I'm always like playing with words and word association. So I was looking at the word haters one day and came up, and it's something I tell the kids all the time. Like when you take the word haters and break it down to H-A-T-E-R-S, it stands for people having attitude towards everyone reaching success. So I got haters, and I got plenty of them, and I'm good with that because I'm going to go for my success.
Because I just see your latest Instagram where you basically showed your new hand signal to the haters.
Uh-huh, yeah. check out the Instagram because there's literally a hand gesture that I teach kids. I'm like, now look, don't do it to your mama because you might end up on the floor like me. Yeah. And the thing is, I think we spend too much time on the haters. And what I mean by that, we spend too much time saying, I understand why he don't like me. I understand why you not feeling me. Who gives a shit? Like, if you feeling yourself, feel yourself. I mean, go for it. Everybody is not going to like what you do. Everybody's not going to like who you are. Look, I'm just going to keep it real. For the first time, I just watched the performance by Beyonce at Coachella. Okay. Just like maybe a couple of weeks ago. I finally watched it. And I'm like, this chick is brilliant. you know. But then I know people were talking about it. Oh, it was too this, it was too that. She doing too much and this, that, and the other. I'm like, child, Beyonce ain't thinking about y'all. She is not interested in what y'all saying right now because she's living it for herself. So I'm like, for us, I don't care if you Beyonce. I don't care if you making $5 an hour. If you are, make sure you find an attorney because you need some support. But like, be okay with you. You know, be good with that. Everybody ain't gonna like what you do. Look, when I, the last time I ever worked in corporate America was January 31st, 2012. I left my job to go do the speaking full time. I was gonna move to Atlanta. I was gonna do like cut, like kick it off from there. And even my own grandmother, she was like, "You're stupid. Like, why? Why are you leaving a good paying job? You know, you got benefits, you got pension, you got all of this. Why are you, why?" And I was like, in that moment, my grandmother was being a hater, just real talk. But the funny thing is I kept going after what made me happy. And I kept impressing myself, which is why now, like literally part of the reason, y'all, I arrived to this podcast like 10 minutes late, CPT time. But it all stems from, remember I was telling you I was out of the country. So I just did a digital leadership conference over in Bermuda. And it's beautiful there. It's gorgeous. The people are amazing. And so I was on a call with them again. They're like, man, the schools are talking about you. They want you to come back for a tour. I'm like, if y'all get flight and accommodations, I'm good. Yeah. Like, you know, let's go. But that would have never happened if I let what my grandmother say, like, hold me back. Like, oh, maybe I should work a job. Maybe, you, no. Like, I tell the kids all the time, don't just do you unapologetically. Stop apologizing for the brilliance and the genius that you are. So everybody don't get it. Everybody ain't gonna get it. It ain't their job to get it. It's your job to get it. I don't care if you're 5 years old, 500 years old. Like, that's your job to get it for yourself. So yeah, I felt like I just went to church on that one, but you know.
Speaking of which, because you always get the message sound a little bit of a preacher feel, but I can understand that. I mean, I was just going to point out that, so it basically does come back full circle from when your boy told you when you break up the relationship, don't never let no one stop your passion.
Don't. I mean, you have people who are making six figures, beautiful home, beautiful car, beautiful woman, husband, whatever that is. And they are some of the most miserable people because they have built this life that's appealing and pleasing to everybody else except for them. Dude, when I worked in corporate America, don't get me wrong, I used to love to dress up in my Kenneth Cole reaction every day, got my haircut every Friday. I had a standing appointment. Like, I was fresh all the time, new clothes, new shoes. Dude, on the outside, like, everybody's like, oh my God, Hark is successful. Hark is great, this and the other. Dude, I was so miserable. I used up sick time and vacation time just because I didn't want to go into the office. I wasn't sick. I was sick at a job, but I just knew it wasn't what I wanted to do. Like, I was like, this isn't me. Like, you know, and of course, my family was happy. Christmas was always great, you know, making a good money and this and the other. And dude, I was so miserable. Like, I couldn't even like sleep because I was always trying to figure out a way to get out of it. And the way I was trying to figure it out was like, how can I get out of this and still be respected by my family or the people who are closest to me? So for several years, I was doing this job trying to appease other people. And actually me leaving my corporate job, it sounds very brave for me to say, oh yeah, I left my corporate job January 31st, 2012. But the truth is, and that is the truth, but the story behind that is I was working at a law firm in Atlanta. And so like my background is like business management and all that. And so I am working there. And at that time I was like, my interest of speaking was sparked. So I was always like checking out stuff. So one day, all of the computers in the office go down and nobody can figure out why. Like, it's like we're just blackout, like nothing is working. The partner or the owner of the firm calls down the tech. They come in, they're trying to figure out the whole situation. They were there for like 4 days. Finally, after that fourth day, like at the end of the day, we had some working computers. That Friday morning, The owner of the firm, she walks into my office, she closes the door, she sits down in front of me, and she says, I need to know from you if you want to work here or not. And I'm looking at her like, what the? I'm thinking to myself, am I being punked? Like, what? Why would she even say that? She then goes on to say, Here's why the computers went down in the office. I had them do a search on everyone's computer and see where they spend most of their time. You spend a lot of time looking at leadership conferences and this, that, and the other. And one of those websites that you went to had a virus on it, which just cost me thousands and thousands of dollars. So I need to know if you're going to work here and I pay you for working here, or if it's time for you to go. And I remember thinking, of course I'm going to stay here. Like, but my heart, bro, like my, that was like one of the few times in my life where my heart just overrode my brain.
Oh, okay.
And my response was, I think it's time to go. Oh. And she's like, okay, let's come up with a plan. Let's figure this out. And so she, now mind you, she knew that was something I wanted to get into. I would talk about it all the time. Sometimes I would go speak at different schools for the firm, things like that. And she saw it. Like she was like, yeah, that's gonna be your thing, right? But then when I started costing her money like that, she's like, bruh, I love your dream, but not on my dime. Like, you know. And so I literally gave she was like, come up with a proposal, this and other. I gave an 8-week resigning letter. And the plan in that 8 weeks was to hire the person who was going to replace me, get them trained, get them up to par, and then I would leave. Because that office, they were nothing but amazing to me, man. They were like amazing. And so January 31st came around. That was my last day. And I was excited. I'm like, yes, I'm about to do what I love full time. And then I got my final check from the law firm, which had like my vacation time on it. And then I was like, oh, shoot. I actually need to go make some money because I don't have no savings or anything like that. Like, so this is the last official check I'm going to get. Yeah. And let me tell you, I'm not going to sit up here and say my story was all glorious and fabulous, because it wasn't, because those first couple of months after leaving the firm was hard. It was so hard. Like, it got to a point where, you know, of course, every month I'm paying my bills as best as I can, but no money is coming in. So then it got to a point where literally I was like 3 months behind on my rent. Every time somebody knocked on my front door, I was going out of the back door because I was afraid it was the sheriff's office coming to evict me. And I'm like, I just can't, like, emotionally, I can't even take that, right? And so it was between January and October. Had a lot of conversations, this, that, and the other. But then the electricity got cut off in my place. The way I could look up business was on my laptop. And, you know, so how am I going to get on my laptop? Thank God for my neighbor. He allowed me to run, like, a cord from his apartment to my apartment, you know, so I could do that. Then they're threatening to cut off my phone. And I'm like, if they cut off my phone, like, how am I going to do this? Like, this ain't going to work. Dude, it was a dark time for me. And it got to a point where I had this game plan. I'm going to make this many calls. I'm going to call these many people. And I did that. And, like, nobody was biting. Like, they were like, you sound great, but we've already hired our speaker for the year. Oh, that's awesome. Maybe hit us back next year. Oh, that's great. Put something in the mail. Like, it was never a yes. And so I remember calling this one lady. Her name was Mary. And I was like, hi, Mary. Just want to know if you hired your speaker for the year. And she's like, yeah, we've hired our speaker for the year. Sorry. I was like, man, okay, fine. And so then a couple of days after that, I am headed to Starbucks with one of my boys. We used to have something called vision casting meetings where we sit at Starbucks and we just talk about, this is what I want my life to look like. This is, you know, and we just talk like it was already happening. And I'm like, I have like $5 left. Four of those dollars is about to be used to get to and from Starbucks. So I'm like, I'm just going to get to Starbucks and order some hot water and a lemon. Like, you know, and as I'm getting ready to walk in, I get a call from, like, this number. It looks kind of familiar, but I'm like, who is this calling me? And I'm like, hi, this is Arik. Hi, Arik, this is Mary. We talked a few days ago. I was like, oh, hi. And I'm thinking to myself, why are you calling me? She's like, you know, when you called, I was very busy. And I realized that you asked me about the state conference, and we have our speaker for the state conference. But we haven't booked our speaker for our district tour. Now, the district tour is 5 days. You're literally going to be going all over New Mexico. Like, you'll be in Albuquerque, then you'll go to, like, the Southwest, the Northwest, you know, all of that. And we can only afford to pay you $1,700 a day. Does that work for you? In the back of my head, I'm like, hell yeah, that works for me. You know, but you know, I had to be professional. Yeah, and I'm like, sure, I can work with that, you know? And that's when things started to turn around for me, you know? And to this day, that was 2012. So that's like almost 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And she's still my client to this day, man.
First of all, kudos on the story, because that's ridiculous. I mean, I've heard the story twice now, so I'm like, this man, he's gone in. But when did the book start? When did you start writing books and stuff? When did that start coming in? Because I know I heard what Roderick was telling you, but I just want to know, so when did the book start? When did you start writing your first book and then start going into, you have 5 books now, I think?
Okay. Yeah, five books right now. So believe it or not, my first book was written in like 2006.
Okay.
But it didn't come out until 2009.
Oh, okay.
Because I was going through this whole, people are going to hate it, who's going to buy it, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. And the first book I wrote was 5 Things Your Guidance Counselor Didn't Tell You. And that whole book was just almost like me, but on paper, like keeping it real and this and the other. And just really talking to, you know, as counselors, look, if you're an educator, if you're in the school system, Matt, shout out to you, because what you all are expected to do with the resources that you have, I'm just blown away by that. But like guidance counselors, like, you know, you have kids who are like, I need some support. I want to be guided a particular way. But a guidance counselor is like, so what's your next class? And how are you? And some guidance counselors, like, they can do a little bit more, but because of the demand, they're not able to deliver that. So 5 Things Your Guidance Counselor Didn't Tell You was like all topics around like, actually parts of my speech, like, you know, the do you and do you unapologetically. I talk about the radio that we constantly have going on in our head, and, you know, which station is it tuned into? Is it tuned into the station of guilt, ashamed, hurt, upset, or is it tuned into anything is possible, I can have the life that I want, and how that has an effect on how you are in life? So it's different things like that, including making a difference, man. And it's just, believe it or not, I launched that book at the very same organization where I did my first speech. They were this amazing support system for me, the Illinois Leadership Seminar. Shout out to them if you're hearing this, but they were an amazing support system to me. I had a book release, and you know me, I gotta be fancy. And so the book release was at a place called Little Black Pearl.
Okay.
And Little Black Pearl was this amazing art space. And all the art that was contributed were from people who were 18 years and younger. So it was all about like this youth-focused art, beautiful artwork. Like the main room, like the floor was a piece of artwork. Like it was, I can't even begin to explain it. So I was like, if I'm gonna do a book release, like I'm gonna do it up. Like I want a DJ, I want a caterer, I want live music going on. Dude, and this is just how I am. So everybody came in, like the book really started at 7, but I didn't come out until 8, but like everything is going good. You know, people are enjoying it. The DJ is really good. And then all of a sudden 8 o'clock comes, and the guy who introduced me was Maui Askedom, the same one who I talked about. So he introduced me, and then he's like, Arik Jackson. So it was kind of a circular room. On one side of the room, there was like this a full staircase that kind of winded the circumference of the room. So all of a sudden, this music comes on. It's like kind of like this house groove or whatever. And then all of a sudden, you see this one girl start dancing down the stairs. Then you see this dude dancing down the stairs. And you see another girl dancing down the stairs. You see another dude dancing down the stairs. And all of a sudden, here I come. And that's how I opened it up. Get down on the dance floor. We do this dance number. Like, I'm like, this is my book release. Like, we gonna do it how we want. I had some background dancers. Nice. And people were like, dude, like, we weren't expecting that. I'm like, ha, right? But I said all that to say, like, even at that event, that day, dude, it was like torrential downpour rain. And there were people who are part of the Illinois seminar who live like 3 hours away, who got in a car just to be there. They're like, we had to be here for you. You know, so it's just, it's amazing to me. And that's when I released the book. Like, and to this day, like, every time I look at that book, it reminds me that no matter how much I doubt myself, no matter how much I say I'm not good enough, that's not the truth. Like, that's not who I am. Your voice is always going to be your worst critic. But really start leaning on, like, what you're putting out there. And, dude, I still have people hitting me up, emails and this and the other, because of that book. Like, that book is still selling on Amazon. And I'm like, you know, when I get the royalty checks, it's cute. I'm like, this is nice, you know. So that was my first book. The second book, which actually happens to be my number one seller, is 51 Secrets to Being an Extraordinary High School Leader. That one was a book where some kids, they were like, man, I love your book, but it's just so long. It's like 200 pages. You know, I got to read Grapes of Wrath and Beowulf and all of that. And I was like, huh. So I was like, how can I do a book that would still engage them? So 51 Secrets is literally, when you look at it, it looks like that black and white composition book,
right?
Because it's supposed to be a secret. So, you know, okay. And per page is a secret. So that book is like 53 pages long, 54 pages long. That's it.
Okay.
And it's real simple, and it's an easy read. It's saying stuff like, I think one of them, I was like, the topic was obey the law. Like, let's some of y'all just don't get this. Yeah. Like, you do stuff that catches police attention,
yeah,
you gonna go to jail. So, you know. But that has been a number one selling book because of the fact that it's such an easy read. And, you know, that's what kids are looking for. And a lot of adults, like, love giving that out to them. So
is that on the ebook?
Actually, no. It is an ebook,
right,
on my website. Right. Actually, that's about to change. But
I grabbed it up.
I'm just saying. That book has actually been a, what do you call it, print on demand,
okay,
type of book. So yeah, if a client is like, we want 100 of those books, I'm like, great, let me get them printed. I got you covered, you know. But that's the, like, when people, even when people look at 5 Things Your Guidance Counselor Didn't Tell You, teachers are like, that looks like a good book, but my kids ain't gonna read all that. Like, you know, they're like, I'm not even gonna read all of it.
Damn.
So give me 51 Secrets. The other books, actually two of them I wrote specifically for schools. So schools commissioned me to write a book, and it was actually a really fun process. Like, I got to tap into my creative side. So because it was their book, it was a book or books that specifically spoke to what that school was dealing with. I know one school was dealing with racism at one point. Another school was just dealing with two high schools combined into one.
Oh, okay.
So that whole thing.
Battle.
Dude, yeah, pretty much. And there was this, like, the covers and the pictures in the book were all of their own students. Dude, it was so amazing.
Nice.
Like, it was awesome. So, yeah. Yeah, those are the books. And if people are like, so when is your next one? I'm like, don't do that to me. Like, just don't do that to me. Am I feeling a book? I probably say in the next couple of years, yeah, because just a lot has been rattling around up here in my brain.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But so this is one thing. I know you can relate to this thing, but it also, I'll put it to you. So in the poetry scene, they have a thing where they have the literary poets, people who basically write books, write poems and their stories and stuff and everything. Mm-hmm. And then you got the stage poets, the mm-hmm. poets that basically go on stage, perform their pieces and mm-hmm. everything. And there's always been a battle between what we call the page versus the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mm-hmm. so I'm trying to find out, are you comfortable, since you've done both sides,
mm-hmm.
are you comfortable with the stage, the page, or both?
Believe it or not, I am more comfortable with the stage.
Really?
How my brain works, like the way that I talk, it just comes out. And I respect both highly. I was talking to a client earlier today, and she was like crafting an email to their Ministry of Education. And she's like, so how would you say this? I'm like, so here's how I would say it. I don't know if that's going to translate well in the email,
right,
you know, but you know, for me, I have a respect for both of them. I love both of them because of the simple fact, like, there have been some poetry that I've read on the page, and I'm like, that's just freaking beautiful. Like, you know, to have my mind going, and then I love to see, like, the poet on stage, like, just going for it. And just for me, that is where I feel most free. And to me, I don't even think it should be a battle between. It's like, where are you most free? You know what I'm saying? Because there are some people who are like more of an extrovert. They can get out there. They could do a show and they could turn. Even introverts. Like, I'm probably one of the most extroverted introverts you'll ever meet. But like once I hit that stage, it's like a whole, I'm like Freddie Mercury up there. Right. Like it's a, like a whole other thing, you know. But there are some people who can sit and process and think in their head and put it to the page. And I'm just like, that is just, is I've read some stuff. And I'm just like, that's just straight up beautiful. You know, so I think, you know, I would say I love both. Where I'm most comfortable is on the stage, but that is my journey. Like, my whole thing is, like, for anybody listening, like, where it makes the skin, or not the skin, but the hair still raise up on the back of your neck. Like, maybe that may be through your pen or through a mic. Like, what is that for you? It shouldn't be like, oh, one is better than the other. It's not. I love both. Like, I love both. And my thing is, when you can appreciate, embrace, and respect both, you are appreciating, embracing, and respecting humanity, like the diversity of humanity. Because everybody is not a stage person. Everybody is not a page person. There are some people who flip between, but that's what makes that art form so beautiful to me. You know what I'm saying? And I mean, I'll compare it this way. So I've read like screenplays and stuff like that. I used to write plays and stuff like that. So you can read a play or you can read a script, and it's going to be one thing, but once you put it on stage, it becomes a whole other thing. I think poetry is one of the few places where whether you read it and put it on stage and it becomes something, or you just read it and it becomes something, because it opens that mind, it opens that imagination, it gives you freedom to think however the hell you want to think in that moment. And I think that's what's so beautiful about it. So for me, I'm more comfortable on stage because I just love to talk. You know, and I love to perform, you know. So that's what I have to say about that.
So since you also are a coach also, do you see people in your profession that who write books, mm-hmm. and then the ones that will perform, you know, the same topics on stage? Do you see also a separation or a combination with that too? Or is it more just the book is just most of the motivation for with the speeches? Most of the time.
You know, I think the book is the motivation for the speeches most of the time.
Okay.
I know for me, it was the flip. Okay. Like the speech really? Was the motivation for the book.
Oh, okay.
But what I've seen is, you know, people who write a book and they point out the topics and this and other, which I think is great, you yeah. know. But that's a very interesting question, because now that I look at it, I look at some speakers who haven't wrote a book.
Right.
And when I tell you are just beast mode on stage. But then when you turn around and read like an Instagram post or something that they did, you're like, damn, like, why haven't you written a book yet? Right.
Yeah.
Like, so I think there's not as much of a comparison in that particular arena, because I think the driving factor is like, are you going to be an on-stage person, or are you just going to be known for your works and your books? And some people are okay with being known for their works and their books. You know, Brene Brown, somebody who I'm like really into right now, you know, she talks about how like her speaking wasn't necessarily like the thing that she was going to do. Like, it was like writing the book and doing the research and all of that. And then it just happened to come up that way, which is very interesting, because if you listen to her, she is funny as hell. Like, she just has you cracking up about like some of the craziest stuff. But to listen to her, you would think that she's like, oh yeah, I'm a stage person all day.
Right.
But she's like, no, I respect the stage, but I love the page. And that same text. So, Well,
you're right, because I do know a lot of people who basically, they put so much time and research into the making the book itself, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. when they have to actually, when someone actually calls them up and say, hey, can you talk about this? I'm like, okay.
Right, right.
Now I got to figure out how to say it.
Yeah, yeah. It's you know, that's equivalent to when someone calls me and asks me, can you write an article? here's how I write 90% of my articles. I'll pull out my phone, I'll push record, and I'll just start talking it out.
Okay.
And then I'll have it transcribed, and I'll go back and be like, oh, I need to, you know, that makes sense to me, like speaking it, but I need to change it for the page. So that's how it works for me. Like, you want to see me have a meltdown? Ask me to write something. Now, even my whole book process is literally, I would record myself just talking that thought out.
Okay.
And then it would get transcribed onto the page eventually.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. That makes sense. And since he talked about writing it down, yes, people, let me say, Arik's name is spelled A-R-I-C. It's not Eric.
It's not Eric.
It's Arik.
Now I'm about to get real fancy. You ready for this?
Go ahead.
It's A apostrophe.
Oh, apostrophe.
R-I-C. Look. let me go ahead and clear this up now. So here's how my name came to be. And people are like, oh, you just made that up. I'm like, no, I didn't. Like, elementary and middle school was like deaf to hear my name. Like, because people would call me Arik, Eric. Look, I had this older lady one time. She called me Apex. I was like, you know what? Ain't no P, ain't no E, ain't no X in my name. But you know what? That's my name today. You've been on this earth for 100 years. You deserve it. You know?
I got charcoal. I was like, no. Where'd that even come from?
Oh, my God.
It's not even the same...
Charcoal? Oh, my God. So you understand my pain, bro.
C-H-A-R, capital R-O-N.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, now, here's the thing. People think that I made it, oh, that must be your stage name. I'm like, no, I did not come up with that. So here's what happened. When I was born, in 76, my mom, I put her through. I was a big baby. So, right? She was originally going to name me Arik.
Okay.
A good portion of my family, especially on my mom's side, very into nursing, working at hospitals and stuff like that. So she was very cool with the nurse who happened to be a Korean nurse. And so when she came in, she's like, oh, you have a beautiful baby boy. What's his name? My mom said, Arik. And the nurse said, oh, no, 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 no. Exactly. You don't say that to a black woman. Like, you just, you do not tell a black woman what she gonna name her child. And so apparently around that same time, I guess Arik was an extremely popular name. And so there were like a lot of Ariks in the hospital at that time. So my mom and a Korean nurse went back and forth on iterations of Arik and came up with Arik. And people are like, well, what does it mean? And I'm like, I don't even know. Like, I just know it's A. Like, if you look on my birth certificate, people think I make that up. I'm like, no, I did not do that to myself. Like, now, I love my name, but it also means I got to stay out of trouble, too. Because, like, people are like, oh, that's Arik. Oh.
They'll figure you out.
That's him, you know. But real talk, y'all, I did not come up with that name. I love it, you know. And it's funny because, like, even my aunt, I love her to life, Aunt Bessie. To this day, she still calls me Arik. But she introduces me as Arik.
That's interesting.
And one day when she said, like, I noticed, like, she checked somebody else. They were like, Arik. She was like, no, his name is Arik. And I was like, I looked at her. I was like, Auntie, so you do know how to say my name? She was like, she said, shut your mouth. She was like, you're my Arik. Nobody else gets that. I was like, yes, ma'am.
Ally. Right. An ally right there.
Right.
We got those.
Yeah. So my mom and a Korean nurse came up with my name. So yeah, what? I get to tell that story. So
but so I always get people when they basically talk about people with unique names and stuff. They always get that when even when I was a kid, you know all the trial and tribulations you had to go with your name. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had to go to trial and tribulation with a teacher where mama had to actually come up to the school and say, you know, his name is Sharon. It ain't Sharon. He ain't going to let his name be two R's. He got a big R for this reason. And basically let her know. I sat in the room like, okay.
Right? In that moment, you just be still. You disappear because when mama comes to the school, it's a whole other thing. It's a whole other thing.
So it's always been trippy to me when people have their name short. I have a friend that basically she shorted her name out just to be comfortable for the people that she's working with. Her name's Amethyst, but she calls herself Amy.
Please.
And I was like, you're not an Amy.
You're Amethyst. Come on, girl.
You
you are amethyst. That's how I met you. That's how I represent you. I can't go anywhere and somebody hear you, Amy. Like, who the heck is Amy? I don't know that person. This is my mind.
You better tell them people, figure it out. You know, look, if you don't stand for yourself, how is somebody else going to stand for you? Like, stand for your name. That is like, you know, as some people say, that's your government. Like, yeah. That's your, go for it. And if you got to check people along the way, you got to check people along the way. I mean, that sounds kind of harsh, but trust me, I'm doing that all the time.
Yeah.
And what was very interesting to me, this is what I don't understand. My name is Arik Jackson. They'll get my first name right. They'll be like, Arik, and then they'll call me Johnson. Mm. And I'm like, where are you getting that from? Like, do I just look like a Johnson to you? Like, and literally, I've been at conferences where they had the piece of paper in their face, and they're like, Arik Johnson. And I'm like, and I get on stage, I'm like, my name is Arik A'RIC Jackson. Like, that's who I am. Respect the name. Respect the name.
So much that even I have to look at going, yeah, it's Jackson. Yeah. Where's the Johnson part? I think it's somehow they have in their head already what it's all they see and what's going to become.
I'm sorry, that's still unexcusable. I mean, you got the piece of paper in front of you.
I've seen people where I basically said, before I even spell my name, it's like, oh, my name's Sharon. They already have the SH already made up. SH, I have so bad that my caller ID, they messed up my name so much, they put S-H-A-R-O. My call ID comes up, Sharon, every time. And I'm like, my friends are like, yeah, Sharon's on the phone. I'm like, I hate you. I hate you. I hate you.
Oh, gosh.
I try to tell them, you need to change that. You need to fix it. What we tried, sir, is stuck like that. It's like, I don't need this number no more.
Hey, it just means we're unique and we have a unique struggle in life.
Hey, I'm thinking when I die, that preacher better say my name. I'm coming back from the dead.
Look, right, raise right up in the coffin. Get it right. Get and it then right. Lay right back down. Now I can rest in peace. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you.
But no doubt. But hey, I know it's coming down to time and stuff, but I do want to say, man, keep going. Keep striving what you do every time. But I just want to do one short comparison.
Mm-hmm.
What is the comparison for a poet and a motivator? It seems like the ways are parallel.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of parallel to each other
mm-hmm.
and stuff. Is there a way to maneuver? Obviously, poetry has its own direction and stuff,
right.
But it seems that you can maneuver around and stuff. Is there a way to maneuver to be
actually
a speaker or no?
Believe it or no, there is.
Okay.
And what's very interesting is one thing that I do is, especially if I'm doing new material,
right.
I'll record myself and then I'll listen back to it. And one thing that I've noticed in my speaking, my cadence and like my timing and tempo, depending on what story I'm telling,
okay.
I'll pick up on that poetic, like poetry slam inside, you know, because in poetry slamming, I know I tend like I'll go da 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 da. And I do that when I'm speaking. There's, you know, there's something I do. And the kids, and it's actually something that's, I will say, time tested. I don't know if it's time tested, but so a part of my engagement piece in the beginning, I'm constantly testing my audience. And how I'm testing my audience is by playing with my tempo.
Okay.
And it amazes me when I play with the tempo, how it draws people in. So there's one thing I'd say, you know, I'll say, ladies in the room, say, hey, they're like, hey. And then I'll turn around and say, I need y'all to do that one thing that y'all do technically. I don't understand how y'all do it. I don't know if Optimus Prime made a deal with it back in the day, but it's this okay. thing that y'all do with y'all neck. And then I do the neck roll. And when I do that, that's almost the first time the audience goes really silent because I have picked up the tempo and they're like, wait, I don't want to miss anything, you know? So it has a great marriage to me. And I can tell you, if I did not do poetry slamming, I honestly believe like my speaking would not be as commanding as it is currently, because I do use a lot of what I've learned in poetry slamming, timing, tempo, pause, breath, beat, like all of that. I use that. And, you know, a lot of times people are like, man, like, how do you just, you know, and it was funny because you know, when you're like a poet slammer, like you slamming in your head every day, right. Like you're constantly in that space. And I didn't realize that I had brought that over to my speaking until someone pointed it out. And then I started listening closely. I'm like, man, that is. So I think it's a great parallel and it's a great marriage. You know, the only difference is, you know, with poetry slamming, it's memorized. For me with speaking, yeah, a lot of my speech is memorized, but I also have the freedom to go off and just like change the direction or something like that. Cause my speeches, they have the same bullet points, but they're rarely ever the same because it depends on like the audience and how they're responding and what they're responding to. And I go with that, you know, cause I'm all about, this is for this group of people right here. So let me do that. So it's a close marriage. I mean, if you're someone who is a poet slammer and it's been a thought of yours to go into speaking, marry it. Like, don't fight it. You know, I think the hardest part, again, would be just knowing that you don't get scripted when you're speaking. I've seen some speakers and kids have seen speakers. The same conference I was telling you about, there's another speaker like in the middle of the conference that they would invite him out to come speak. And the way that particular conference works, like after you attend, you can come back and volunteer over the years. So it was one student who I was with and she was standing next to me. He was speaking. I know that he's saying the same thing. Like there's no shift. There's no change in it. And so literally she's standing next to me and she starts reciting his speech like almost word for word. And I'm like, damn, like that's messed up. Like to me, you know, I'm not saying don't memorize stuff or whatever, but if you're so stuck in, these are the words I'm going to say, these are the jokes I'm going to tell, like it's going to get numb.
Like another punchline.
Yeah, it's yeah. And it was, dude, that was like a huge moment for me. Like when this girl is standing next to me, she's telling the jokes and I'm like, wow, like you haven't changed it up in at least 3 years to the point where she can like every year just come off and say. So if that's something you're looking to get into, grant yourself some freedom, you know. And let me say this, if you're looking at being a speaker, you know, as a poet, because it is performing, there is a certain level of perfection in a sense, you know, and perfection, I'm going to tell you, is going to be your biggest enemy as a speaker. Because of my experience has been when I hit that stage without me even saying words, people have already put expectations on me. They've already said, oh, he's better than us. Or there's some tone of that. Oh, he's all that because he's on the stage. And so within the first 10, 15 minutes of my speech, like the work that I'm doing is getting them to get I'm a human. I'm a human being. You know, I poke fun at myself. I do it. Look, there's been times I was just telling somebody yesterday, I'll do random stuff. And sometimes that random stuff pays off. Sometimes it does not. So one time I felt like this rock star and I was on a stage. I jumped off the stage. I didn't brace my fall good enough. And I literally sprained my knee on the spot.
Damn.
And I was only 3 minutes into a 1 hour long presentation. And like literally when I landed, I heard my knee pop and I stopped and I said, y'all, I think I just jacked up my knee. And they were like, ha, ha, ha. But then they saw how serious it was because I kind of had on like some baggy jeans. Yeah. But like 30 minutes into it, my left knee had swole up so much. That side of the pants wasn't baggy no more. No more. It was just like, nope. These are skin tight right here. And, you know, but all I'm saying is, number one, I think being able to marry poetry, especially poetry slamming, because you're used to that poetic performance. How I see poetry slamming is filled with passion, is filled with energy, is filled with love, is filled with conviction. And all of those things are needed as a speaker. Like all of that needs to be present, you know. Part of the reason why I have been so successful and what I've done is because I've allowed that passion, I've allowed that love, I've allowed that conviction to flow. So if that's something you're thinking about, and I mean, like, real talk, if you're somebody here, you hear this, and you're looking to make that transition, please, I'll make myself available. Like, but I'm going to be like Maui asking them. I'm going to tell you a certain time. If you show up, awesome. If you don't, you don't. So, Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. That's my thought on it. Yeah.
Most definitely. Yeah, yeah. Well, why don't you give them a little bit of your, why don't you tell them about your social media and stuff so they know where to get a hold of you.
So my popping spot right now is on Instagram. So it's at I am Arik Jackson. So it's IAMARIC.
Remember the A.
Right. Jackson. Not Johnson, Jackson. All right, so it's at I am Arik Jackson. I'm on Facebook as well. If you look up Arik, A-R-I-C, Dream Achiever Jackson, search that, you'll find me. So those are my two main spots for social media. And if you're a poet and someone who's just looking to just, you know, if there's any way that I can serve you, because this is a community of people, you know, and I think it's important that we look out for each other. And I know where my roots come from. You know what I'm saying? So I'm always willing to help, always willing to give a word, always willing to support. So just direct message me. You know, I mean, I get back to you in like a day. It might take a couple of days, but I will get back to you. I promise.
And also just put one of your books out so to let them know.
So if you go to Amazon, look up A apostrophe R-I-C Jackson. Five things your guidance counselor didn't tell you. And actually, I was talking about toying with the idea of doing another book. I'm thinking about doing a 2.0 of that book. But it's rich. And the funny thing is a lot of adults have read that book.
Okay.
And they're like, like, I understand this was for, like, this one parent, she hit me up. She was like, I know this was for my daughter. She just left it around. I started reading it, and I couldn't put it down. So thank you. I was like, well, thank you. Appreciate you. So, yeah, but if you go to Amazon, look up A apostrophe R-I-C Jackson, you'll see me. That book is so old, I used to have hair. I am now a proud man rocking the bald look because my hair decided to leave me at an early age, but that's okay. That's all right.
And then the website?
www.arik, A-R-I-C, speaks.com. So arikspeaks.com. As a matter of fact, if you go on my website, you'll be able to see a video, which that video, if you've ever heard of Goldcast, got over 1 million views. That was crazy.
I checked it out.
That was crazy. Yeah, so you get to see me in my rawness, like that sweating and everything. Like, yeah, but that, and that's just me. Like, and I own it. I'm proud of it.
Most definitely. Yes, everybody, check him out. Check out Arik himself and get on his social media. He is comical. He basically is comical on his Instagram and everything. He'll let you know. It's like, this is what y'all need to do.
Yeah.
And please just get informed with them and stuff. Man, thank you, Arik, for coming out.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for doing this and providing such an amazing space for poets. Real talk. And it's so interesting. And I'm just going to say this. I know we're going to have to jump off, but it is a podcast like this that reminds me so much of Chicago, because it's always about supporting each other and how can you do that. And so just keep up the great work, man. Just keep that space open. It's definitely needed.
Most definitely. And I'll just let everybody know, I'll get all the information afterwards and stuff, and hope you all feel good. Get with Arik, basically get on his Instagram. I love his Instagram. It's crazy. he has an Instagram pin. That's crazy. But all right, y'all, take care. All right, peace.
Thank you.